given me of the WIPCO story, but I've lived up to it also. And I've leaned over backwards to promote people from the acquisitions, and some of our own people, the old WIPCO people, accused me of not being nice to them. But there are no more old WIPCO people, because the Sonneborn people from 1960 are the old WIPCO people now. Argus and Kendall from 1966 are the old WIPCO people. Once you look around, president came from, or the chairman came from the Carbon Black Purchase, Carbon Company, which I bought 7-8 years ago. He's the chairman. Dennis Andrews, who was a Sonneborn man. Bill Mahoney came, was the other one. The chemical man came. We bought Humco in Memphis and moved him up here. So they came from acquisitions.
You just mentioned something you were going to come back to that from earlier. You're getting back into Carbon Black after all the time
you
were out.
Carbon Black built our company. I showed you figures before. It was made all in America. We did a hell of a job of manufacturing here through associations of investment with Continental Oil Company and Phillips. Investments also with individual from Canada. You could build a Carbon Black plant any place. Just go with this little gas coming out of the ground, put up some sheds. Have you ever seen one? The soot comes up and goes over 50 miles. You can see it 50 miles away. Unbelievable. It's pure black soot. Nobody collected anything. Carbon Black sold as low as 2.5 cents a pound. That was worthless. They couldn't afford to put up equipment to collect. Whatever you collected from the scrapers, they fell down and threw it in bags. Oil changed everything, became sophisticated, but it was worldwide, but it's very important to us. We had 5 different companies. Crown Carbon Company was a partnership with a very large ink manufacturer from Canada. We had Panhandle Carbon, we had WIPCO Carbon, we had, I say Crown, we had Continental, we had one more, Bornhardt Hydrocarbon also. So, and we ran them all. We meaning my father. My father was president of the Carbon Black companies. WIPCO handled the sales of these 5 companies, and we allocated the sales based on their share of production. This company had 12% of the manufacturing or production that month. They got 12% of our orders. That's all there was to it. We kept separate books, subject to audit. If any of the partners could come in and look at the books, we treat everybody fairly. We took a selling commission, and we owned parts of the companies. Over the years, with the change of oil, they were merged together. The gas black plants slowly phased out, called channel black versus oil black. And the dominant one became, at least for archives or publication, I'm not ashamed of what I'm going to say. They know how I felt. We ended up with the mergers of putting everything together of the overall company, 20.16% of the stock, 20.16%. The other partner was Shamrock Oil out of Amarillo, and Continental Oil out of Houston, those days. And we have a joint board. We are very nice. All the top people, Continental Oil Company use us as a training ground. Some of their top people over the years, and sitting on the board with all the top people of Mr. McCollum sat on the board, and Howard Blauvel sat on the board, and Tarkington, you name the top Continental, they like this Continental Carbon Company. We have 6, 7, 8 board meetings a year. We report on sales. Shamrock wanted out and sold their stock to Continental. Continental owned 50-some percent. We owned 20.16, and Shamrock owned 28-point-something percent. So they bought them out. We had the right of first refusal. We turned it down. But they came to me and they said, look, you got 20.16%. Will you sell us the 0.16? That way we'll have 80%. If we have 80%, we can consolidate for tax purposes. We can save a lot of money. We'll still run it separately. But instead of owning 20.16, you'll own 20. We're going to save a lot of money on tax. I could have said, well, that 1.6% is really important to figure out how much taxes and charge them accordingly. I didn't. I said, okay, if it helps you, your partners. Whatever you're paying Shamrock for their 28, we'll take the same prorated price for our 0.16%. It wasn't much money. So now they own 80%. They consolidate for tax purposes. Okay. Now, over the years, a couple of years go by, and they decide, rightfully so, that they'd like to do their own manufacturing, or their own marketing themselves. We had an evergreen with a 36-month cancellation, and we thought we should handle the marketing. We're better positioned to do it. We have the organization of marketing for 30 or 40 years, had a lot of entree, and we renegotiated the selling commission. I forget if it was from 10 to 8%, whatever it was downward. And again, we held them off. But finally, one day, on December 31st at 5 o'clock, I'm working here, I get a registered letter giving us, after 40 years of business together, a registered letter terminating the marketing agreement. Not even a phone call. The partners. So they were terminated from the marketing. We had 36 months evergreen. And we still own 0.20%. We still own 20% of the stock. It's a great story, great story. So it's like a novel of who did it. I was a little offended. I said, you know, we're board members, friends together. You could have told them, we could have maybe negotiated something. Well, they want to do it themselves. I fear this is the way to cut the cord. Yo.
I'm going back office in the building.
Okay.
This time they told me they changed the locks.
Okay, bringing back a new key?
Hope so.
You want to get that, Dorothy? Okay, we got 36 months. We go along for about 6 months. I hire somebody. I'm really bad now. I want to go carbon-like business. I hire a guy, Charlie Palocki, to come to work for us. He just retired from Colombian Carbon. Charlie said to me, what's going to happen if my recommendation is not to build a carbon-black plant? I said, don't worry, we'll find something for you. Don't worry. We're not going to find it. Sure enough, his recommendation, he couldn't get know-how, don't do it. He ended up in charge of investor relations, advertising, finally got into marketing and where he belonged. Nice man, Charlie Palocki. So a year goes by, a year and a half, and it's getting tough because we're sort of lame duckish. They're hiring people. But they can't put them out in the field because we have exclusive and we're still 20% owners. The costs are going up. So I go and I make a deal with myself, the marketing organization. Give the people a choice to go with them if they want to or stay with us. And they go direct marketing about a year and a half. Now business gets a little tough. They cut out dividends. They got 80% of the company. There's no dividends. So they're friends. We've been in business a lot. So I go and I say, look, guys, we're not doing the marketing. What the hell, we got 20% investment in this little private company that doesn't pay dividends. We got no return on our investment. We go to board meetings. We just sit around. We're not involved in the operations. It's just an ownership. Buy us out. Buy our stock. Well, they laughed at me. It's why we buy out. We consolidate for tax purposes. No payout on buying out. We're consolidating for all purposes. We're not paying dividends. Why should we buy? Why should we pay you money? It's not costing us anything to keep you in. I said, you son of a bitches. Now I don't ever get mad. I said, I really freaked out. I said, the only reason you got consolidation because I gave you a 0.16 and now you're shoveling up me and telling me, I really got mad. My whole business life, I never got mad. And these are people I'm still friends with. I consider them highly unethical, highly screwy. It would have been nice to say, we'll take you out, and you know, what the hell, you're not involved with the marketing, you're not involved with anything. We still went to board meetings. I wouldn't pay directors, I still went to board meetings, because I was trying to, now they want to, they're at Ponca City, Oklahoma, where we have a plant. They want to shut down the carbon-like plant in Ponca City, and use the bubble concept for pollution, where they're expanding their refinery. If they eliminate this much pollution in the carbon-black plant, they can save, and I won't give you figures, but I heard some unbelievable figures, how much money they could save on building the expansion of the refinery, because they wouldn't have to put in the pollution stuff. So go to board meeting. They're going to shut down the carbon-black plant, and they're going to pay the company book value. And look at them. I said, you guys got to be crazy. Book value. You're going to pay replacement value of that plant. You don't tell me you're going to use depreciated value. You don't know what a stockholder, you're going to get sued right and left and right and left and right and left. I was really upset. They're not going to, now they're going to steal the plan to do book value, which is now depreciated almost to nothing. So I threatened a lawsuit. Never did before. And these are good friends and still friends with John Kirsch and other people. Make a long story short, they agreed to take us out. Finally. The only reason they took us out is because of forcing them out so they could use the bubble cards. They took us out. And they paid us the price for our 20%. I was happy with that. Now, over the years, a few more years go by, and Continental's bought by DuPont. DuPont decides that I want to be in the carbon-like business. They negotiate. In my own mind, I want to get 100% of that company for what they paid me for the 20%. In my own mind, and I got it. I negotiated the thing, and I took the money they gave us for 20% and got 100% of the company. By then, they straightened out some of their international operations and sold them to Philips International. They bled the companies. There was no money. They took big dividends out, and there was no money left when they had a bad year. So they were heavy in debt and some guarantees. They worked their way out of international. I just got three domestic plants and their joint venture with Coppers Australia for the price that they paid us for the 20%. It's been a nice venture in a sense. Anyway, end of story. I was just upset on the, when they laughed about buying the 20%. There was no business reason to buy the 20%. No tax saving. There were no cash outflow on dividends. Why would they give us money and get nothing in return for it? I really got upset because these are the same people that asked me would I kindly sell at 0.16%. I said, sure. Anyway, that's it. Okay, so we're in the carbon black business again.
What about phthalic anhydride, should I mention?
Oh, that's again our failures. Phthalic, long process, long size plant. We came at the end of the cycle of naphthalene versus orthoxylene, fixed bed versus fluid bed. Just at the time that they were just about getting ready to switch over to ortho and fluid bed, we were building the last of the fixed bed naphthalene plants. And we're just not competitive. We had 20 million pounds in Chicago, 30 million pounds in Perth Amboy. Shut them down.
Called the junkie, pulled them off. Commodity. It was not a special, it was a commodity chemical.
We're still trying to stick to specialties. That's our cup of tea.
How was your father, well, how shall I phrase it? How was it having your father look over your shoulder for all those years?
Great. We remained good friends. I never worked for him. He pushed me. He pushed me ahead. He did. And he was very supportive of everything I ever did. Very supportive. I could tell the story again for history. The Kiwani Kendall Oil, 2 hours 35, cumulative convertible preferred, 245, 255, 265. It was getting a little rich at the end. Seemed rich those days anyway in 1966. The amount that we were giving, which was a guaranteed cumulative convertible preferred stock, so we had to give the 265 instead of the 235, which is 30 cents a year on the number of shares. Dividend. So it was getting rich at the end. We had another board meeting. Should we up it one more time? I felt negative vibrations from the board. I really did. The figures showed it. So I said, I'm not taking a vote today. Let's think about it overnight. But let me just say, unofficially, if I were going to have a vote right now, how do you think you'd vote? I went around the table, saw that my father was sitting at the right. And everybody expressed them, and I just had to figure out that's why they called for a vote. And it just came, I could see if there was a vote, I'm going to lose it. It came to my father last minute. He said, stop pussyfooting around. What kind of wimps are you? Let's go for it. And everybody said, I agree. And it was 100%. I said, let's take a vote, 100%. He didn't sell me money. He took that position. He wanted the business, go for it. What the hell? And everybody quickly switched.
That's a beautiful story.
Well, they respected his opinion. They really did. They were good people and outside directors, but very thorough. But when it came to our business, they respected it. And I say the same. I've had 100% backing from the board every single day. I never had anything. Yeah, once. Want a quick story again for the history?
Sure.
We do everything by the numbers, approvals, board meetings, and everything else. And we were buying a new piece of equipment, an earth mover. We do diatomaceous earth, where we strip this out in the state of Washington. We take off the top 10 feet, we dig up the stuff, we calcine it, blend it. And it's a filter aid. Buying a new piece of equipment. People at that time had International Harvester, one of the big companies. They wanted a Japanese piece of equipment, Kubota. And there was a certain time they presented very well. They had written statements from the users of the Kubota equipment. They had letters from the state about Kubota's inventorying of spare parts. They had maintenance records and was better than the International Harvester. This was $700,000-$800,000 piece of equipment. And time, there was a price on it with a time that fell in before our board meeting. So I said, place the order, what the hell. Came to the board meeting, and it was a routine thing, just replacing an earth mover, well documented on the parts and the service, and the price was 12% cheaper and a lot of stuff that was just so great. Came over, my brother spoke up. He said he thinks it's un-American for us to buy foreign equipment, American workmen need this and that, and 12% or 14% that much, it can't be that bad, and we should go American. The board said, yeah, you should go. And I said, board, I hate to say, we already purchased it. First time, I said, I ever violated anything, and you caught me with my pants down. I said, I've never violated anything. And the first time, you get caught. It's like a guy cheats on his wife. The first time, you know, in the movies, they get caught. The first time. What was that a movie with, I think, first time? So everybody laughed and went home. Then I realized, next board meeting, my brother has never had anything but foreign cars his whole life. I've never had anything but American. He has bought nothing. He hasn't had an American car in 25 years. And I called him. I said, never, you son of a bitch, talk about buying American. What are you doing? Oh, that's my personal life. That's not business. You should buy. I'm glad he bought the Kubota. He's always had foreign cars. He loves cars. He buys 3 or 4 a year and sells them off to his friends. Never American. He's got now today, he's got a Volvo, he's got a Mercedes, and he's got that new 850 BMW, the new 12-cylinder BMW. Okay. So that was phthalic. What was wrong with phthalic? We went out of phthalic. It turned out to be a commodity, not a special run here for that.
There's an expression which shows up a number of places, including your newcomer address. Dates back to your father's father, your grandfather. Well, there's something wrong with that.
I just took it down off the wall. This is the only picture I had here. It was a quotation for Ed Aegis. The next day, rushed it over to us and said, there's something wrong with that horse, Eli Wishnick. And above it was a little painting. Oh, there's the car I'm talking about. The oval track car. I do have a picture someplace. It's a hand-built oval track car. And somewhere there's a little picture above, a little guy on a horse and wagon in the road pedaling. Little cheapy nothing. The picture, I was in Chicago, and a lawyer who was originally a board member, because our firm started in Chicago, was a law firm, called Leroy Weiss. And I was in Chicago, and his whole room is filled with diplomas and this and that. There's one little picture of a little horse and buggy, very badly painted. I said, Roy, what's that? He said, that reminds me of your father. He said, would you like it? I said, yeah. He said, would you hang it? I said, yeah. He said, I'll make you a deal. You send me a picture of your father, I'll give you the picture here. It's been sitting here. It's been sitting here. The picture, and this is the thing, this is the something wrong with that horse. They took it in last week to reframe it.
And put it over to the other place.
Yeah. The agency said, there's something wrong with that horse. And as I said, they're in business. You know, sometimes you got to be the devil's advocate. What if? There's something wrong with that deal.
So your father sort of acted as the...
Yeah, he was a good devil's advocate, but he was very supportive of me, everything I did. And we discussed a lot of stuff. The last 10 years of his life were tough, maybe 5 years. About 5 years. I used to wheel him in every day. He lived up here at the park in 56th. I'd pick him up in a car. In the good weather, I'd wheel him here. I'd pick him up in a car. At the other building, we had to come in through the service elevator. No ramps. He read his Wall Street Journal. He had Parkinson's that affected his throat. He didn't shake, but he couldn't talk. Besides being fragile and frail, he could not talk, but he understood everything.
My mother just went through that.
The throat also?
So I understand that.
Yeah. We lived a fine life. He died a couple months short of 88, and he kept working right till then. Doctor told me he's going to die. He lived up here at 56 at the Lombardi Hotel. But the doctor, his personal doctor, happened to be the house doctor also. He was in the hotel every day, every morning from 8 to 12. They went to the hospital with his patients. So when I'd see him at lunch, I'd bring lunch up like this, corned beef sandwich, so the doctor would come up, see my father, and then go to work, go to the hospital. He told me one day, so your father was going to live 3 days. What do you mean? It's no different than he was last week. He said his will is gone. There's a difference. When you want to live, you live. He said he's decided it's time to go. His will is going. He just moved. And that was it. 2 days he was gone at night. So he's right. If you want it, you're going to fight. So I like old people who are grouchy and angry and fight back. When they don't fight, they're in trouble. Right?
Right. I understand. My father's 86, so.
If he's grouchy and yells it, that's good.
Exactly. How do you compare the new people coming into the company today? Say your company in particular, or the industry in general, over the years that you've been involved?
Not as productive. Or staff, which is very important, by the way. It may be important, but it's not as productive. It's important because you got to comply. The people fill out. I had a policy here, I hope they're following. We don't fill out any voluntary anything. If you got to do it, we're going to do it. It's voluntary. When Congress writes in it, please describe all of your processes. Tell us the type of equipment. Tell us this and that. Voluntary. Now, if they want it, we got to do what we're going to do. We can't have engineer. So the staff, they're good people, but they're not productive. They're very non-productive, but important, essential, and you can't survive without them. You can't survive without them. The day's work doesn't produce, and that's why I tease people about everybody's meeting. Nobody's going out and getting orders. I mean, what the hell's happening? Nobody's, theoretically, we used to be, you know, maybe 50% of our people were marketing people. Now, if it's 5%, I'm a lot.
Really?
Yeah, if we've got 8,000 people, if we've got 400 in direct marketing, that's about right. You know, 20 in this division, 50 in this division, 30, I don't even think that much. I can show you this list here, everybody I can check off who's in sales, at least 50%. We're in sales today. I don't want to, you know, 5% would be 400 direct, so maybe it's 500 direct marketing, I don't know. Because what you can consider direct marketing, inside the office taking orders. The more salesmen, the better. So it's frustrating, and I think it's one of the reasons why it was no more fun. No more fun.
Did you do much selling yourself?
Oh, I was a great salesman. I was one of the best. I thought. Every salesman thing. Oh, sure. We were a small company in the 50s. We had nothing. We had a chemical plant. Everybody sold. There were no staff. There was no environmental staff. There was no legal staff. There was no... You had an insurance manager, I guess, at work, that was it. Factory insurance, not much. The insurance department got 11 people, and they go overseas to review insurance, and everybody's traveling, everybody, but getting orders is it. I think that's what we built them, and it's my heart cell. I will say this, that that the combination of, I've said this again, the combination of the three companies, Whitco was heavy in marketing, and we didn't give a damn about research, we didn't give a damn about manufacturing, marketing ran this company. Then we bought Argus, and we bought Sonneborn. And Sonneborn didn't give a damn about marketing. We're like, wash the floor and then go out and sell. Technical was not very heavy, but manufacturing, these are monstrous plants. Make their own sulfuric acid and really big, heavy industrial plants. So manufacturing ran Sonneborn and marketing ran Whitco. And then Argus, the technical people ran it. Marketing and manufacturing, you have patents, technical. And the three legs of the stool of manufacturing, marketing, and research, really, starting in 66, really seemed to gel back towards the bottom line. We all infrastructured with each other. The Leisner ran Argus, moved up here, ran all the chemicals. Henry Sonneborn ran Sonneborn, moved up here and ran all of the petroleum parts of the business. So it worked pretty well. But I don't think people today, they're awful good, they're awful bright, but not as productive towards the bottom line, but essential. That's all I can say, not productive, but essential. If they all disappeared and we didn't have to do what we had to do, then this would be a lot better. And we're very pro-environment, we're very proactive, we're very conscious of what we do today, but there's such a thing as overkill, too. It's just overkill. We used to measure stuff in parts per million. Now it's parts per billion.
Right.
Now they got equipment to be parts per trillion. Well, I mean, come on. Parts per million's out there, and everything is mostly everything parts per trillion. People didn't die when they had 10 parts or 1 part per billion, so, I mean, per million, and when you add 3 zeros, it's
yes, I
you hear that same thing as you go around.
Yes, absolutely. Over the years, did you have any major accounts, or was your business spread out over a lot of smaller accounts? Or
in the beginning, rubber was the thing. Mm-hmm. When you saw those figures there, there were only 5 rubber companies, really. Firestone, Goodyear, Goodrich, General, and I'm trying to think of the Goodyear and Unirail. That was it. I'm going way back. There were 5 accounts, and we all personally went into Akron. We personally covered everybody at Akron from top to bottom, from the receiving clerk to the technical manager. And of course, we did a lot of business with the Armstrongs and the Coopers and the Generals, but the major tire companies. Now it's diverse. Today, if you take the total company, there isn't that dominance. By division, there is. Some of our divisions that do 50 million of sales, they'll have a dominant customer that will do 5 million, 10% of their business. But on a total basis, no.
What about competition?
All over the place. Unbelievable.
All going years back, too? Or were you, in the rubber industry, were you pretty much?
We always compete with Cabot, who's very good. You know, Cabot and Caribbean. They don't make much money. We think prices are too low. We don't collude, we don't talk about prices, we just know they're not making the money they should be making. And we're not making the money they should be making. Haven't been a new producer, tire people are killing each other, and therefore go to the raw material people and say, you got to support us or else we won't talk to you for 20 years, you know, and stuff like that, so everybody earns. I guess Detroit goes to tire people and say, we're earning, God damn it, this long to pay for tires, if not, we're not going to talk to you for 20 years. Public goes to buy a car, they look at the sticker, and they go down and they chisel the last guy the last $100, that's all. But things are, everything is different today. There's no one industry anymore. Plastics are very big with us. Plastics crosses most of our divisional lines. We have products, a lot of products from organics that go to plastics. We call Argus, very heavy. Humco, very heavy. Sonneborn, very heavy. The white oils are lubricants and stuff. So plastic probably is our biggest single industry today. But it's diverse amongst lots of accounts.
Okay. So you say as you're moving it down the street here, or up the street, I should say, that...
Park Avenue. Park, 53rd. Okay, Park. Okay. This is 53rd Madison. Of course, you can almost see the building.
So you feel confident in the future of the company?
Oh, yeah. I think it's very well managed. I think they got their eyes set on better margins. I just hope the morale, it's different. You can't stop things. I was very easygoing. Morale was very important. Our people were very important. I think it helped us in acquiring companies. Our reputation of treatment of people did certain things 3 years ago. I don't want to toot our own horn. I look at our pension funds, we're doing so goddamn well. And I was heading the pension committee. I said, let's take a look at giving some money from the pension to the retired people. Let's take a look. Well, the problems you had to go to, you had approval with the government for signatures and registered. Make a long story short, everybody that's retired was retired at that time. Got $500 cash, plus $100 a year for every year they're retired. Somebody's retired 15 years, we get $500. 1,500, get $2,000. Voluntary out of the pension fund for the older folks. Well, I explained to the board, I think that's good for morale for them, but it also affects the people that are working for the company. There's so damn much money that we're overfunded, and what are we sitting on for? It doesn't do anything for Whitco. Still doing well, I'm bringing it up again, let's do it again. And it was 3 years ago. I got the nicest letters from people. A lot of them felt it wasn't the money, but they remembered the contribution. We had one guy, he's 99 years old. He's still alive now. He's 102. So he was retired, I don't know, 48 years or 49 years, so he got $5,400. He mows his lawn. He bought himself a lawnmower, sit on. Got lovely letters from people. But it's morale. So I worry, but at the same time, I think, you know, it's a different environment than I was young. So, this was built on personal relationships. They were lasting, long lasting. Today, people don't think anything whack, 800 people gone, just like that. I don't know how those 800 people were doing the day before. We haven't had any layoff. That's the only layoff we've had. We haven't had any early retirement programs. I'd rather freeze hiring than fire. We have a lot of retirements every month. Every month people are retiring. And why fire and then hire for replacements? Why not just freeze? Take care of yourself, 100, 150, 180 a year, retirements, that's all. A lot of people want to switch them around.
I mean, again, I'm not all